Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You guys can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. We're also going to do a cross-platform feed swap episode with the show where we are putting it on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast feed as well. You might be listening to it there. This episode of the show, I think, is, of course, you know, one of the most useful ones we are going to do all year, as I brought on Colin Drew and Brian Jester, who are basically the two best showdown NFL players in the world. Colin has over 10 showdown wins under his belt at this point, including a few solo wins, and Brian won the 2018 Super Bowl Millionaire Maker showdown slate with unpaired Julian Edelman in the captain. So basically the two best guys to talk to about showdown and single game fantasy sports. And, you know, I kind of just tried to sit back and listen to this episode because these guys are, of course, you know, a lot better than me and a lot better than all of us at Showdown Fantasy. So kind of just a big deep dive into Showdown as the 2020 NFL season begins. Hope you guys find this useful. Hope you find it enjoyable. Of course, if you want to support the show, you can subscribe on patreon.com/takecast for bonus episodes of the show, or you can just leave a rating and review on iTunes. That's very useful and helpful as well. Now, let's get into the show. All right, everyone, welcoming in Colin Drew and Brian Jester. We did one of these episodes last year before the Super Bowl where basically we brought in the two best NFL showdown players in the world. We put them in the same show. Brian won the 2018 Super Bowl showdown. Actually, Brian, I don't even remember asking you, how did the 2019 Chiefs 49ers Super Bowl go for you? How did the title defense go?
It was close. Almost had a decent chop on FanDuel, but I think, as Colin can attest, a couple of the final plays of that game didn't go our way.
Yeah. Colin also long time noted, I don't know, like 15 showdown binks at this point. And I believe, Colin, if I remember your tilt correctly, the Mahomes kneel downs at the end took you out of the first place chop on FanDuel.
Yeah, that was unbelievable. And I rarely play FanDuel, but with like 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, I felt like I had a really good time to figure out how to approach building somewhat unique lineups for their lottery. And yeah, I was in first place for like, I think it was like 50K-ish until the Mahomes kneel downs. And I just, that wasn't even like a plausible scenario in my mind that it was anything that could cause me to lose. And so that swung the winning captain and ended up swinging the lineup. So that was, I don't know, you play enough of these slates, you find all sorts of ways to win and lose, but that was definitely something where I was just like in just pure
disbelief. So
it's even worse because it's the last slate of the year, right? Like you have no chances to redeem yourself for another 6 months.
It's like the one game I like watch with my wife too, and I was like showing her my phone. I was like, oh, we're doing pretty good.
We're doing pretty good. I mean, Drewby, she can't possibly be. She has to understand you are the single game king. Like she's got to know, like Thursday night, like she's got to be on Wayfair, like shopping for like sectionals and stuff, because she knows like that's payday.
We almost named our second daughter middle name Showdown.
I thought you were gonna say Wayfair.
So yeah, I mean, I think that one of the cool things is between the two of you guys, we have a premium partnership announcement where the folks who are grinding the showdown slate, which I think that showdown is Drewby, let me know if you agree with this. I think it's harder to realize your equity because of the variance and because of the chops, but Showdown NFL specifically has more edge than Sunday full slate, just like, and I'm not even sure it's close.
I absolutely think it has more edge, probably the most edge of any like game format on DraftKings. I've run like unsustainably hot too, so that dwarfs my opinion on the variance a little bit. I do know the variance is extremely high. The one thing I would say to counteract that is you get to play a lot more slates. So NFL main slate, you're playing once a week. Showdown, you got the three main primetime slates. You can also get in on the grind slates on like 4 o'clock or 1 p.m. too. So there's a lot more slates to realize your edge, which I think helps the Showdown player a little bit.
Yeah. So, Brian, I mean, tell me a little bit about this show that you guys are going to be doing on Daily Roto and Occupy Fantasy.
Yeah, I'm so excited. It's every Monday and Thursday for the Showdown slates. Colin and I are going to break down the slate via a premium podcast, and it's only going to be available for Daily Roto and Occupy Fantasy subscribers. And the great thing about it for me is we get two very different viewpoints on the slate. We both approach Showdown very differently. And so we'll both discuss, you know, top plays and lineup construction, uniqueness and approaches. So hearing Colin's thoughts and then hearing my thoughts, I think we'll have a very well-rounded discussion for each of these slates. And it's only available for select few. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pumped. I mean, I just love talking with educated, smart Showdown people. And the fact that Brian approaches things differently from me is always thought-provoking. And so I think, you know, we're definitely going to go through kind of projections and where the risks are between certain players, but a lot of it will be roster construction too. And it's not going to tell you how to build your lineups, but it's going to ask a lot of thought-provoking questions and give approaches that we're going to be using. And you'll kind of be able to make your own approach or decisions based on that. If you do want to get access to Daily Roto, you can drop the promo code Showdown and save 10%. You'll get optimizer access projections. You'll get this podcast we're talking about, plus our full NFL DFS product. And then I know Brian's also got a Showdown ebook that he's released for this year with some strategy stuff. And I'm really excited to read that. Every time I talk to Brian, I learn something. So I know there's tons of great stuff in that book as well.
So, yeah, so go ahead, Brian.
Sorry, David.
Tell us about the book.
So actually I partnered with Justin Freeman, who is doing a great series on YouTube and a good podcast series called The Captain Spot. And he's bringing on a lot of smart guests discussing Showdown theory. So partnered with him. Partnered with Chris Rooney, who writes with me at Occupy Fantasy, and we wrote this high-level Showdown for both FanDuel and DraftKings strategy guide, and that's available on our site. It's available on Justin's site, and on our site, you can use code GUIDE50, GUIDE50, to get 50% off the book. So
there we go. So if you are wanting to join slates that people who are very good at fantasy think have an edge, I would definitely recommend reading Brian's book. I would definitely recommend subscribing to Daily Roto and Occupy Fantasy to get these premium Showdown podcasts. And I think where we should start here is kind of with a kind of like a quick refresher for people who, you know, obviously it's been a year, you know, 6 months since we did the Super Bowl episode, kind of from a high level explaining overall strategic approaches to Showdown, because I know that you guys sort of differ in some of your goals, and then some of, you know, the macro goals are also the same. So Colin, I think we'll go ahead and start with you kind of explaining some of your macro approaches to NFL single game slates on DraftKings and FanDuel.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, at the end, we'll kind of give what we expect our like 2020 thesis to be, our approach for that. But I think about Showdown, there's kind of four different buckets of things that matter a lot to me. Correlations and captain correlations are the two most important things to me and where I spend most of my time. So building groups and rules within an optimizer that kind of dictate what you want the rosters to look like. If you're using a quarterback at the captain spot, you know, how many receivers or tight ends you want to pair him with, whether or not you include running backs in that mix. If you're using a wide receiver at the captain spot, like whether or not you want to dictate opto to use the quarterback with there. And so correlations are extremely important to me. They're probably the most important part of my process and the way that I build lineups. I think the field's gotten a little bit better at correlations over the years. And so there's been some efficiencies that have been kind of coming into the market there, but there's still plenty of edge to be had. So those are the first two. The next two are projections and then ownership and uniqueness. We are going to add ownership projections for Showdown at Daily Roto this year for both DraftKings and FanDuel. So that's going to give us a lot more of a mathematical way to try to create unique lineups if you do desire that. But then the projections themselves, a lot of people dismiss projections and say that they don't matter. And I think that they don't from like the point of view that there's a lot of randomness in a single game, but they matter a lot because they are what feeds the optimizer and what tells it what to do. And so trying to understand how to set up projections and really focusing not just on median projections, but on what like a player's 75th percentile might look like in a given single game and how that relates to other positions. Those are kind of the most important things, I think, for like Showdown basic strategy.
One of the things that I think that you find is really important if you play a lot of those slates is not the number projection, but actually like your Anthony Firkser projection, your Jesper Horsted projection. Like, can I actually project these $200 guys for two interactions in a game, or should I be projecting them for zero? And that is, I mean, obviously that's the stuff at Daily Roto that we are grinding, you know, really, really hard. And I actually remember some slates last year where like the entire leaderboard was DR guys because we had Anthony Firkser projected for, he scored a touchdown on one of those Thursday night games, and we had him projected for like 3.5 DraftKings points. And on Roto Grinders and Osmo, they had him projected for 0 points. So like even if you boost those guys, they're not feeding into optimals if they're projected for literally zero. So I know that Brian will give him a second on his rant on projections, but I actually think grinding the lower down guys is where stuff tends to get very important, as opposed to getting the DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett projections decimal perfect.
Yeah, and I'll toss it to Brian after this. I do think that's exactly right. And you really want to be playing somewhere where the people who are at that website are playing Showdown, because nobody else is really going to be spending the time on like fourth and fifth wide receiver projections if it's just something that spills over from a main slate. Whereas if you go to Occupy, I know Brian's playing all those slates, so they're grinding that stuff hard. Obviously, we're playing all of those slates as well. And so whether or not you use us or someone else, I would definitely recommend to use a site where you know people are playing the formats consistently. And then I would love to hear kind of Brian's kind of basic strategy and especially ownership uniqueness, which I think is one of
his. Yeah, to start with projections, I definitely agree that, you know, decimal points, especially amongst the studs, doesn't matter that much. The projections don't matter. And the way most people use projections, especially if you're a casual player, if you subscribe to a site, you're using those median projections, which we all know here, it doesn't really matter that much for Showdown. We're looking for the ranges of outcomes, those ceiling performances, those outlier performances. And you do make good points about those cheap salary guys. And it's even more important on FanDuel, where if you get a 5K player to catch a touchdown, all of a sudden now not only can you fit in multiple high price studs, it also gives you the ability to leave salary on the table, because a touchdown from an Anthony Firkser at 5K could actually outscore the kickers at 7,500 or the third and fourth receivers at 65,000 or 6,500, 7,000. And what that does, it allows you to leave 2,000 or 3,000 on the table and help you get unique on FanDuel. So totally agree there. And where Colin and I differ is he just said he talks about his correlations first and foremost. And I do put in some rules, and I've gotten a lot better at implementing those. But for me, it's trying to get as many unique lineups as possible. So all my research is developed around how can I get a unique lineup, and whether that's salary usage, you know, captain usage, the way the lineup is combined. So after every slate begins, I'm always downloading the slate data and comparing not only the number of unique lineups I have, but also the number of lineups that I call them acceptably duplicated. So if it's like 10 times or less or 5 times
right,
or less.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the big thing for me. So worrying about that beforehand, and then most importantly, checking it after and making sure my process is right.
So sort of along those lines, what percentage of users from your interpretation of the data do you estimate are basically making no attempt to not be duplicated, right? Like going in and clicking optimize, you know, so not limiting salary cap, not limiting ownership constraints, anything like that, and just playing, you know, basically the 150 best raw project, or even users who are making 10 lineups and making no effort to not be duplicated, you know, just putting in their 10 highest projected points lineups.
Yeah, I think especially for the non-150 maxers, it's really bad. They're definitely not doing that. But even the 150 maxers, like the script I run after a slate ends shows me what all the 150 maxers do, because basically that's who I'm competing against. I'm trying to beat all of those players. And like, I don't know, 20% or so, I would say, are optimally doing this. But then the other 80% of 150 maxers, you can just tell that there's zero effort. Like, they're very high profile players, guys at the top of the Roto Grinders rankings, the top 10, that you'll look and you'll open, whether it's, we were talking about MMA DFS before we came on, or NFL Showdown, and they'll have 0% unique lineups, 0% of their lineups have been duplicated 10 times or less. And it's like, I know you have a lot of money in play, and that maybe this isn't a big sliver of it, but you're actually just lighting this $1,500 on fire.
So that's, I mean, that's pretty damning, right? To think that even in, because the, what, Colin, the big one on DraftKings is normally $10 or $20.
Yeah, it's usually $10. I think to start the season or for the Super Bowls, they'll do $20. But I think, yeah, for sure, those guys are definitely letting some money on fire. And a lot of those players are players that are probably distracted at lock by other sports, and so they're not doing it quite as thoughtfully. And this is something that we focus on pretty exclusively for the days where we're playing it. And it'll be interesting if there's not basketball in the fall, if there's not baseball in the fall, I actually think we could see even bigger Showdown contests, which is pretty surreal.
Yeah, I mean, the operators love Showdown, right? Because it's over in 3 hours, so the money's in, the money's out. They are some of these, I mean, DraftKings and FanDuel are both offering second half slates, right? They're ordering the for the big games. My guess is for some of the really big Monday night games, we're going to get both second half and fourth quarter slates, which I mean, that's a whole different ballgame. My guess is those have to be some of the softest contests out there, where very few people are 150ing those. Very few people are playing those slates with rules or anything like that. I guess so, I mean, obviously, for those slates, we're going to be dealing with some incomplete injury information. I actually remember there was a slate last year where DraftKings ran the second half slate. And, Colin, you probably have a better memory of this than me. I believe it was an Eagles running back slate. It might have been a different position, but the starter left the game injured in the first half, and a bunch of the DR subs ran with the backup running back, or maybe it was a wide receiver, but because there's no in-game injury reporting, like there's no Roto World blurb for in-game injury reporting, the guy came back and the backup ended up just being like the nut low, but it should have been the most exploitable spot ever. And my guess is, you know, there's going to be one or two spots this season with second half or fourth quarter Showdown where that edge exists, and it's not going to be accounted for by the public at all.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I love with the custom projections we have at Daily Roto, is you can quickly plug in the like second half team totals and stuff when you get the odds, and so you can kind of have it at your fingertips there. And it's tough. I mean, it's definitely a balance, because I do think there is an edge, but it's also like mentally draining to be like sweating Showdown and trying to play Showdown and building lineups and stuff. So it wasn't something I was able to do every week, but I definitely think that if I feel the need to get on the grind, it is a good spot.
Yeah, for sure. So, Colin, I guess we were just Brian and I were just talking a little bit. Your internet just dropped off there, about kind of percentage of the field that we estimate to be making a real effort to be unique. But I think that the other thing is, what percentage of the field do you estimate to be forcing these correlations really specifically? Because I think that there's a difference between trying not to be duplicated and trying not to be duplicated with plus EV lineups, for sure. So what is your perspective on that?
I honestly think like 80% of the field might be using correlations at a basic level. Some of that just could happen by default, like wide receiver captains, and then quarterbacks are popular, so they are playing quarterbacks in those lineups. But I do think a lot of people are using correlations and kind of have some of that basic stuff down. And I think you kind of see that. Well, when you see these huge chops, it's always like a perfectly correlated lineup that uses like the full salary cap. for the most part. And when you see a really unique winner, it's always something that like looks a little trashy and has like no correlation to it. So those two things just tell me people this year, and that's one of the things I think changed a bit as far as 2019. I think people started to use correlations a bit more than they had before. It's still an important thing to me, so I'm not planning to get away from it entirely. And then I think also people started to use the quarterback and the captain a little bit less than they had been before. But again, it still is like one of the highest areas. It is just a small shift that I saw as kind of the commentary and showdown content went up a bit last year, what people might have been adjusting to.
All right. So looking back at 2019, Brian, in terms of process, in terms of results, in terms of the field that the decision was making, you know, what are some of the things that stayed the same? And then what are some of the things that the field was doing differently? Some of the things in your process that changed, you know, kind of just, you know, what it, in terms of overall showdown theory, what changed or stayed the same in 2019?
Yes, I think Colin hit on the first thing was the quarterback usage. It definitely dropped a bit, but it's still at higher levels that we can still exploit it. So I'm curious to see how that fares in 2020. And, you know, we just talked about the uniqueness. So I think the field from the area I look at actually hasn't changed that much as far as attempting to get unique lineups. So, again, going to continue to monitor that throughout the 2020 season, but I still feel very comfortable about my approach, being able to try to get over the field on unique lineups and pray for some chaos. If that starts to get to the point where I can only get 5% unique lineups, then maybe it's time to start looking somewhere else, but we're not at that point yet. And as far as my own personal process, you know, Colin just mentioned the trashy lineups at the top winning uniques, or winning unique first place, solo first place. At least last year, I started to put a more concerted effort into tweaking my lineups post optimizer build or post lineup building process and saying, all right, this lineup, it's definitely going to be unique, but it's like, there's actually no chance it's probably going to win. And there's definitely some slates where whether I was pressed for time or honestly didn't care about it as much, then I left some of those lineups in. But I think I can trim some of that fat. And I started towards the end of last year, and especially this year, making sure that my 150, even if they are unique, actually have a legitimate chance of winning.
Yeah, and I think that trimming the fat is a really important thing, and always run the optimizer multiple times before finalizing lineups, because, look, you get 150 shots on goal, but if you waste 20% of them, like, you that's 30 lineups right there, you know, $300, but it's like 30 lineups that could be live. And so I think trying to make sure you're using all 150 lineups that you're entering is a really hard thing to do, probably harder than people realize. And so I think that is something that's really important. And we can kind of go through some of the winning lineup analysis that I've done from pulling together data from the last 2 years. This is all up at Daily Roto, but we're going to go through a bunch of the data points here. And I kind of want to get Brian's feedback here. And most of this stuff is just, it's a fact. These are what the winning lineups have been like. It's not what the field plays. And so it doesn't mean it's necessarily optimal. But the first one is captain by formation. So this means, like, how does the captain position relate to the number of players on a team? And so of winning lineups, 5% of lineups used a naked captain with 5 opposing players. 10% of lineups were a 2-4 construction. 34% were a 3-3 construction. 33% were a 4-2 construction. And then 17.5% were a 5-1 construction, basically an onslaught against one player from the other team. Any initial thoughts there, Brian, as far as potential edges?
That naked captain, I think, wasn't that a Devontae Adams slate where he was like the only player who did something for Green Bay? I'm pretty
sure. Possible.
Yeah.
I even remember that game. It was the game that he also broke his foot and left, but he literally was the only player on Green Bay to score more than 12 DraftKings points.
Yeah, that was that slate. Again, like you said, we don't have field percentages to compare this to right now, so that's where the true edge lies. If we find that only 10% of the field is doing 3x3, but 30% of those lineups win, then we know we need to start doing more of those. But I think we do know the edge is in the onslaught stacks, the 5x1. You said, what, 17.5%? Yeah. I think the number is actually lower, if I remember correctly, for what the field does. So we could probably get a little bit of leverage there, thinking that I imagine the field goes heavy, especially like on those stupid New England – New York Jets Monday night slates.
Of course, they're going to go
5x1 Patriots captain slacks, and it's like the most tilting thing ever. But on a slate
the defense
where the
spread... captain got there. The defense captain getting there like 6 weeks in a row was one of the most debilitating things that's ever happened to me in daily fantasy.
Bro, I lost so much money those weeks. but yeah, so I think, you know, not looking at the big favorite games and looking at games where the spread is a little bit closer and using onslaughts in those weeks is probably a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. And I think 5-1 onslaughts. There are some optimizers out there that the default setting is max 4 players per team. And so you definitely want to review your settings and make sure you're using the right thing there, because I think that's why the field percentages are low. Winning lineups by captor position. I'll go through the data. I don't think we need to talk about this too much, but quarterback, 17.5% of winning lineups had a quarterback, 32% were running back, 34% were wide receiver, 8.5% were tight end, 6% DST, and then there was a kicker in there, 0.88%. But I think we talked a little bit, the quarterbacks generally rose last year primarily because of Lamar and Mahomes appearing on more primetime slates, and those guys absolutely smashed in those slates. And so one of the things you do see is they start to get to like 33% ownership individually as captains. And I still do think that the field is overplaying the quarterback position a little bit. That's kind of my only take.
So I have a, cause I'm just a listener here. I'm just here to learn. I have a donkey question for you guys. So Lamar was on, I believe, 3 showdown slates last year. Maybe it was only 2. I don't exactly remember, but I went, instead of doing what I know Colin did, and I'm wondering what Brian thought. Colin, at least in one slate, just nuked Lamar from captain entirely. Was basically like, look, you know, if Lamar gets 24 and Mark Ingram gets 33, you know, I'm rich. And I went the other way, where I just used only Lamar as my captain, so 150, maybe 300 Lamar captain lineups. And first off, I actually think Lamar has a chance to be better for fantasy this year than he did last year, because I have them projected to throw so much more often. But not even specifically to Lamar. This is more of like a McCaffrey, Lamar, Saquon style thing, where if we go into a slate and we have a player projected, let's say, 8, 9, 10 points better than every single other player. Brian, kind of, what is the way you are going to handle one of those slates where one player is the just not only the nexus of their team scoring, but is also projected to score much more than anyone else on the other team as well? How do you approach those slates?
Yeah, I don't think you had a donkey approach at all. I think that was pretty sharp. The way I think about it, when we have, I call them cheat code quarterbacks, you know, Lamar, Patrick Mahomes, where it's like no matter what you project them for and no matter how much the field has, and they still exceed expectations. So I like your approach. It's either 0 or 100 for me, right? Because especially if they're going to be 33, 35, 40% at captain, and then you go over to FanDuel where Lamar's 60% MVP, Mahomes is 50% MVP, you got to make a stand, right? It sucks to have all your eggs in one basket, but either go 100% Lamar or 0% Lamar. Being in the middle doesn't really get you anywhere, no leverage. So I'm on board with that idea. And actually,
I think for Lamar, it's right to be on the side of trying to be way over. Where I think it's interesting is McCaffrey, because McCaffrey will have, let's say, 3 games a year where he only gets like 15 DraftKings points. It happened. It happened in week 2 against Tampa Bay. I think it was his worst game of the year. Yeah.
I made 100K that night.
That was a good night.
See, they're playing for outliers. There you go.
I mean, you're fair. And I was going to say that, like, the Lamar thing, obviously I got busted all those nights, but it worked on CMC. And I think, you know, like Lamar could leave with an injury. There's a lot of different things that can happen there.
Here we go. We have a guest spot from Colin's daughter coming in to congratulate him on being so rich for fading Christian McCaffrey against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
While he takes care of that, Davis, I can actually talk a bit about FanDuel.
So
Colin talked about DraftKings winning captain percentages, and the big issue with FanDuel, like, we're able to talk at length about DraftKings because everyone has the ability to download the CSVs and analyze the data, and we have all this slate data. Problem with FanDuel, you can't do that. However, there is a little bit of a trick, because the guys at NumberFire, who is owned by FanDuel, they have access to that data, and very rarely FanDuel will let them use this data in their articles. And so Brandon Gadula, one of the editors over there, actually just put out an article reviewing the 2019 FanDuel single game season. And he actually used a lot of the data that we don't have, especially what the field does, because we literally have no way of knowing that. And so if you look at what happened in 2019 in the 100 plus FanDuel single game slates, here's what, Colin, I want to get your takes on this. I know you don't play FanDuel as much, but I think the takeaways are pretty clear here. If you look at what the field did versus what the actual optimal lineup was in each slate, here are the percentages for MVPs. Quarterback, the field had a quarterback MVP 50% of the time, but the actual optimal was running back, 31% field, 37% actual. Wide receiver, 16% field, 24% actual, and then tight ends and kickers are at the bottom of the barrel. But to me, it shows, again, that even in a scoring system where quarterbacks are more favored, they're still being used more than what the optimal lineup indicates.
Yeah, that does seem like that's the case. And obviously, it's a high-risk approach. And so if you're someone stretching your bankroll to play these, maybe fading quarterbacks is going to be dangerous. But it does seem like that is where the edge is. And I think what you're seeing with the wide receivers is those multi-touchdown games. They're probably still outscoring the quarterback. And then obviously the running back stuff makes sense too, especially in a scoring environment that rewards touchdowns more than catches. The running backs obviously have a lot of touchdown equity and a lot of touchdown upside that does bake into the median projections. And so I think both of those are pretty interesting. I would also guess that the running backs and wide receivers have cheaper salaries, so you can also get more unique by using those players at captain, not just because of their individual ownership, but because just the ability to leave some money on the table and create uniqueness that way is also more red.
All right, so I have another big theory question, and I think that people get bogged down in the specifics with this too often, but they should just kind of have a – I think that people should have a philosophy for this before the year starts, and that is the cheap captain, right? So – And obviously, maybe on a couple slates this year, an injury will happen, and an active will happen, and a cheap guy will be projected for like 14 points or whatever, and he'll be a fine captain just based off that projection. But I'm more talking about like the Traquan Smith captains, the backup running back captains, the Firkser captains, right? The kicker captains, where the scoring upside for that individual player is like, let's say, 12 points or whatever. I mean, kickers can sometimes get 15. I actually remember there was a Vikings-Washington game where the Vikings kicker got like 21 because the Vikings just they scored every drive, but they never scored any touchdowns. So I know, Colin, you binked with the Traquan captain, but how often are you going into slates thinking like, okay, I want the cheap captain to be part of my philosophy, and how often are you just trying to, you know, eliminate those, just the really shitty plays from the captain spot?
Yeah. I mean, I think if two of my biggest wins, one was 175K with Traquan Smith, another was like 100K plus with Randall Cobb on the Cowboys last year. And look, those guys are very viable captains. The Traquan Smith game, he wasn't like a fourth wide receiver for them. He was the second wide receiver that night. And so I think that the wide receiver three is certainly viable as a captain, especially on a really good offense. I think like the Anthony Firkser captain, I'm not playing those guys, like the guys who are very clearly not having a material role. But I'm definitely happy to play a little bit of exposure to sort of the guys you might consider a little bit dusty, like the Cole Beasleys or Randall Cobbs and stuff. And I probably am over the field on like the wide receiver two and three captains on most slates. I would say it's not a spot I load up, but if like the field's at like 2 or 3%, I'm usually at like at least like 5 or 6%.
Yeah, and I actually, you know, you make a good point about the wide receiver two and threes, and they are normally what 2 to 5% owned. So it doesn't take much for you to get leverage. Like one of my goals is always to try to have leverage on every captain or MVP that I use. That way, if that is the optimal, you know, in theory, I have more shots than the field does. And the way I look at these dusty captains, we'll call them, is because I'm worried about salary and uniqueness, right? A lot of times if you use an Anthony Firkser captain, almost always you're going to end up near the salary cap, the 50K. And as a result, it's going to be duplicated pretty heavily. So for me, the way I look at it is if I'm using one of these cheaper captains, can they outscore all of the players $2,000 or $3,000 more expensive than them? Because if that's the case, if I have, say, Randall Cobb at captain and I can leave $2,000 left over, that's likely going to be relatively unique. And not a bad lineup. So that's how I look at it.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair, where you are – looking at like a 12-point game as being like useless, but someone like Tre'Quan Smith, for example, if something happens in game, Emmanuel Sanders gets nicked up, Jared Cook leaves the game, whatever, or they just get down and they have to play a bunch of 11 personnel and he's going to be on the field, you know, someone like Tre'Quan Smith has the ability to have like a 24-point game.
Yeah, and just to clarify before we move on, like if a guy is not in a starting role going into the game, I'm usually not using him at captain. But if it's a wide receiver three, I do consider that a starting role, and I'm fine using them.
Yeah, I think all of that sounds about right. Okay, are we ready to move to our listener questions now, Colin?
Yeah, we can do that. I'll go through a couple quick nuggets on number of defense special teams per winning lineup. So 60% of lineups have zero. 38% have one, and then 1.75% have two. So I definitely am a fan of the max one DST rule. Same thing on the kickers. 64% of lineups have zero. On winning lineups, 32% have one, and then 3.5% have two. So again, I know two kicker lineups can get there, but I'm still fine with the max one rule. And if you look at them combined together, it's only 14% of lineups that have like two or more of the total of them. So I think you could also set a rule for like max two kickers and defensive special teams in your lineups. Some of the interesting ones that I think are going to be things I want to dig into a little bit. So the wide receiver tight end captain is stacked with the quarterback on 76% of winning lineups and is not stacked with the quarterback on 23%. And to add an additional level of that, the number of quarterbacks played on wide receiver tight end lineups, like 92% of the time, it has more than one quarterback. So you do get a decent chunk of time where the wide receiver is actually stacked with the opposing team's quarterback instead of their own. It's still the dog to happen. And so like that, the most likely thing by far is that the quarterback is going to be paired with it, or the wide receiver is going to be paired with their quarterback. But there are cases where this doesn't happen. And depending how sharp the field is about using correlations, I think this is in the, when you talk about like stud wide receivers that are really expensive, this becomes a pretty thought-provoking thing. And I'm curious how Brian approaches wide receiver captain with correlations.
Well, there was one time where someone used a wide receiver captain and didn't use any quarterbacks and won a lot of money. I can't remember when that was.
That must have been the Julian Edelman guy that won $1 million.
Yeah, that donkey. Yeah, and it's kind of similar in FanDuel too, where 85% of people use a quarterback wide receiver stack there. Again, that's data we would normally never have if NumberFire doesn't publish it. So again, I encourage everyone to go read that article. But it's always dependent, and I'm not trying to force those correlations because, Colin, like you said, it's not a 100% occurrence, and I think the field probably plays it closer to 100% than they do what actually happens. So especially if I can get a receiver that has a massive target share and or can rack up PPR points like Edelman, those types of players where they can get there in a lower scoring environment, then their quarterback may not be included in the optimal lineup. And a lot of times this ends up happening when the game goes under the total. I think something like 70% of the unique winners over the past 2 years have occurred when the game has gone under the total. And so in those cases, you can definitely get a PPR heavy wide receiver at captain where the quarterback doesn't appear because there aren't as many touchdowns to go around, not as many passing yards to go around, and the optimal ends up with, you know, 10, 11 receptions.
Yeah. That is true. And I still will probably build most of my lineups with the quarterback paired with the wide receiver captain. Yep. For transparency on my approach because of correlations, but also the in-game injury to a quarterback. I think we saw some of that with Mahomes last year with a unique winner on a Chiefs slate because of the Mahomes injury. And then the last thing, I think leaving salary on the table is really important, and people dismiss it as a talking point on podcasts. But if you look at the winning lineups, it is very clear that the vast majority of the field uses within $200 of the salary cap. And the vast majority of winning lineups are more than $500 below the salary cap. And those are just some really high level data points. I believe 78% of lineups have been winning lineups have been 49,400 or below. And the vast majority of the field is using numbers ahead of that. So leaving salary on the table is not really going to hurt your chances of winning that much. And it's going to dramatically increase your uniqueness. And it's just the simplest thing you can do in an optimizer to create some uniqueness, maybe still some dupes. And it's part of my strategy. I'm not trying to create unique lineups in the same way as Brian is, but I'm trying to reduce the number of duplicates. So using a max salary for me was a very clear takeaway from that.
I mean, that is of all the things that it's simple for someone to do listening to this, if you actually are serious about trying to create plus EV lineups and not trying to grind out min caches, that it literally is the easiest thing you can do. Like, go into your optimizer of choice, go to salary and limit it to 49.7K. And like seriously, that it takes 5 seconds of effort. Go and actually, this is, I don't know if you guys do this at all. I go and look at my 150th lineup after I do the salary constraints, after I do my correlations. I go and look at the 150th lineup. And if I can look at that lineup and it just makes sense to me, like I look at it and I'm like, okay, this is probably, it's unlikely to be duplicated. It has parts that work together. You know, it's not something where if it won, I would be calling the winner a donkey. Then like, I'm like, okay, cool. This is good to go. I'm going to upload this file to DraftKings. Like that's just sort of my thought. And then, but maybe Brian's probably like, no, I want my lineups to be like, I want to look at that lineup and be like, I would never play that by hand. Which I'm so Brian, I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah, a lot of my lineups do end up looking like that. But as far as salary usage goes, the way I approach it is I'll start just hand building lineups. All right, what's possible with this slate with these salaries? And especially if we get an underpriced player due to injury or role change or whatever, and the optimal build through projections leaves like $1,000 left over. Yeah. All right, then maybe I'm setting my salary way lower. And then post build, I'll look, because I'm more aggressive with my salary usage. If I get, I'll sort by total salary after my lineups are built, and I'll look at lineups near the top of my salary ceiling and think, all right, how chalky are these? Is there any way I can, you know, just move a couple spots so these aren't duplicated a bunch? And then I'll go all the way to the opposite end of the spectrum and look at the lineups with like 44K salary. And it's like, all right, does this have like four tight ends for some random reason? Let me get that out of here. But just tweaking those endpoints is where I think a lot of edges can be found.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. Anything else before we get to listener questions, Colin?
No, let's jump into it. I think some of the questions we have about FanDuel, so we can definitely touch on that a little bit with Brian's info. And then I think some of the other questions are about single entry and things like that. So a lot of good questions here.
All right, so our first one from our boy, Christopher Traub, who is a Daily Roto subscriber. I'm a big fan of this fella. What allocation of your 150 max do you run as subsets of different game outcomes versus the Vegas projected score? And then there's a second part to this question, but a little explainer. So in the Daily Roto Optimizer, you can change the projected score. So for example, if the Ravens are favored by 7 against the Cleveland Browns, you can change the projected score to make the Browns a 2-point favorite. And obviously that feeds into the projections in a lot of different ways, you know, projected plays, market share of touchdowns, all of that. It's very intricate. So Colin, how much of your lineups, you know, how many of those subsets are you changing the projected score?
Yeah, that's definitely slate specific, but I would say at most I'm running like three different sets of 50 lineups for different outcomes. And usually I'm running either one set of 150 or two sets of 75. And if I do change the score, I'm usually not changing it to something insane. Like if the total is 50, I might, in one team is a 7-point favorite, I might make that team a 13-point favorite. So it's basically like one standard deviation in one direction. Or I might run a set with them as like a pick'em. And so when I do that, it's usually within something that I consider a pretty plausible outcome for the game, not a true outlier, but something that will be different from the way that the field is building lineups. And I think generally what you're kind of thinking about is that teams who are ahead by multiple touchdowns tend to run the ball a little bit more. So you can tweak the run to pass ratio on the plays. Teams that are ahead tend to run more plays than the teams that end up losing the game. So if you are making an underdog a favorite, then you could increase the play count for them, perhaps make them a little bit more run heavy. And so those are some of the things that I would tinker with a little bit. Obviously, a lot of that stuff ends up being team specific. But yeah, that like Tampa slate was an example when I did run a subset of lineups that basically had an outcome where Tampa was a little bit more pass happy. And therefore, I was able to get the Tampa passing stacks in there instead of a CMC build.
Are you doing anything like that, Brian?
No, and that's the beauty of this. We have our approaches are so different, and I love it because that's a super smart way to approach it. And Colin's going to capture what like 90% of reasonable outcomes, and then you add in the correlations and his dedication to looking at salary and other aspects. And he's going to have great lineups in those 90% of the time, or at least have a chance probably. Whereas me, I'm on the opposite end. And as I'll gladly admit that my top 0.1% finishes are fewer and far between, but they're more unique. And it is not as much resistance to get there. We talked about wide receiver injuries. And I think you talked about the Philadelphia Eagles. It was week one against Atlanta. I had a ton of Nelson Aguilar and Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson go out immediately. So that's some chaos for me that happens, and now I end up
playing for the in-game injury. I've been meaning to make this point the whole time we've been here. Playing for in-game injury makes sense in football anyways. Yeah. But in this year, when dudes have not played preseason games and guys are coming up, pulling up limp with, hamstring injuries and stuff like already, playing for in-game injuries in 2020 is going to be like a core thing you should be doing for real.
Yes, 100%. And then the other, we talked about the Mahomes in-game injury. I had a lot of lineups playing for the under in that game, and I had barely any Mahomes. And then he goes out at halftime. And of course, these two slates I've talked about, were top 10 finishes. So, But the model that I helped build for NFL is completely, it doesn't use any Vegas inputs. Like, my goal was, I know a lot of people use Vegas as a baseline, and I wanted to get away from that and have a completely unique line of thinking. And so all the inputs for my model have nothing to do with Vegas. So as a result, I don't end up doing any Vegas type related projection changes. For me, mostly, again, it's coming to those outlier events. So whereas Colin's looking at plus or minus one standard deviation, I'm looking beyond that in both ends. And so, again, it's just different approaches, but I think both very smart.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So we have Justin Freeman, and who's already gotten a reference on the show. Check out the Captain Spot series that he's doing. I believe both of you have already been on it or are going to be on it. I think I'm going on week one with him. So this is, I think, actually, if I could get one question answered to me before every game, this would be the question I would most want answered. Seriously, of all the correlation matrices, of all in-game injuries, this would be the question that I would want answered the most, and it would be, how often can you go same running back from the same team, both in the flex and in captain, and kind of, you know, what rules are you determining in terms of using same running back from the same team, Colin?
So I think there are a lot of winning lineups that end up having two running backs from the same team, probably a little bit more than I would have initially anticipated. And this was like a 2018 rule where I was like max one running back per team. And that was a rule I moved away from last year, and I would still use it in certain times, but especially with teams like Baltimore, teams like New England that heavily utilize running backs both in the running game and the passing attack, and are run centric teams. I think that those become situations where we have seen two running backs from the same team. So it is definitely a little bit team specific. You can look at correlation charts, and one of the things in the Daily Roto Optimizer you can use is, instead of excluding it, you can use a key boost rule. So if you found that two running backs have a negative 0.2 correlation, you could create a rule that says whenever using Sony Michel, reduce James White's projection by 20%. And then that will flow through and you'll get less of that happening in your lineups. And so that's kind of how I have been approaching things. But I do think that you saw two running backs on the same team a decent amount of times. And you, especially when you get into the 5-1 onslaught scenario, that is another time where it's like increasingly viable.
The Jalen Samuels Wildcat quarterback slate with where he was basically playing quarterback and James Conner, like, I think they both hit over 20 DraftKings points, and the winning lineup ended up being Samuels MVP, Samuels in the captain slot, Conner in the flex. I know that was a slate where there just was really no good reporting, right? We just didn't really know what was happening, and so if you'd had that rule in place, you were definitely bummed out. And there are a couple teams where, you know, like the Patriots obviously are the classic example. The Buccaneers use multiple running backs. Like, there are definitely times to do it. Brian, how are you feeling about the two running backs from the same team, or three even?
That Samuels Connor slate was so gross. Yeah. A lot of it comes down to salary too. I think it's two things: salary, and then what the lineup itself looks like. So You know, there was a Baltimore slate last year where they beat Cleveland. They had three running backs in the optimal, but Gus Edwards and Justice Hill were like 1K or less. So it's a lot easier for those cheaper backup running backs to enter the optimal if they're that price compared to, say, Jamal Williams, Aaron Jones, who are both, you know, in the top half of the salary range. But then two, if you know, if you allow two running backs in your lineups and you go into your builds afterwards and you see that, okay, I have a 4-2 stack, my two are two running backs, like that probably doesn't make sense. So it's, there's some rules there or some post lineup tweaking to make sure that if you do have two running backs, it probably has to make a ton of sense from a game script.
Yeah, I think that is pretty fair. Okay, we got one from Hedemost here. Naked rushing quarterback in the flex. So this is Lamar. We're going to have this with Cam Newton this year, Josh Allen for the Bills, Watson for the Texans. I think even Daniel Jones for the Giants as well. I'm assuming that Brian is going to be a fan of the naked rushing quarterback in the flex, and Colin is still probably going to want the correlations with most of these guys. So Brian, I'll let you tackle this one first.
Yeah, I'm a fan. The only time I'll really add a quarterback rule in the flex is if it's a pocket passer. So if it's like Jimmy Garoppolo, like I'm pretty more captain, whatever it is. But again, if it's Lamar, or we even saw we have the Houston Kansas City game coming up. I believe last year there was a game where it was a 5-1 Kansas City optimal, and Deshaun was the optimal, was in the optimal as the one with no other Houston pass catcher or players. So yeah, the ability to be able to run gets you there, especially on Chico guys like Lamar and stuff. So yeah, there are definitely situations where
are you jamming in John Brown with Josh Allen, or are you more open to the naked QB flex, Colin?
No, I'm fine with it. If those guys are captain, I'm stacking them with at least one player, and if they're in the flex, I'm fine running them naked if they want. Definitely want a wide receiver with the pocket pattern.
Yeah, I mean, so Aaron Rodgers, Kirk Cousins. I actually for some of the super dusty pass only guys like Darnold, Kirk Cousins, I actually, even in the flex, was doing min two pass catchers, because I think you're, by using the, because the quarterbacks are always expensive, you're really only getting a discount the way the DK algorithm works if it's like a backup or if it's like Jeff Driskel. Like that's really the only way you're ever getting like Sam Darnold in a Jets showdown slate is you know, it's still gonna be expensive. And okay, we gotta let Brian do his FanDuel single game spiel here. So this is from 95 Cigar. Basically, there's this group of grinders who is really into chasing the overlay for FanDuel tickets. Apparently, every day on FanDuel, every slate, there's massive overlay in the satellites to tickets. And one of the things they're doing these tickets for is the single game on FanDuel. So, Brian, this is your floor to really get into it with FanDuel single game.
That subset is probably 98% overlap with our members. Like
yeah,
my
definitely.
Ultimate guide that I wrote in, you know, the content we provide about contest selection, like all of our members are chasing those. And at the risk of FanDuel catching on to this, but I'll say it for everyone, because we only have 7 days left as the time of this recording. If you exceed 150 tickets for a contest on FanDuel, they give you site credit for the ones you accumulate after. So like people are still getting like 900, 1200 tickets and just getting site credit. So it's basically like a double up where you have to beat 10% of the field. So if you're into that and you can get into those contests, go do it. So yeah, a lot of people do have FanDuel tickets. And again, we hit earlier about the quarterback MVP percentage. The biggest thing though is salary usage, right? If you use a Mahomes, a Lamar Jackson, any decent quarterback at MVP, you're going to have to leave 2,000, 2,500, 3,000 left over to have a chance of not splitting with, you know, 700 people. So that's the one key. The other key is just using like a 1% owned player. Those Anthony Firksers, Khalif Raymonds, those guys, if they catch a touchdown, a lot of times on FanDuel, they end up in the optimal lineup. So that's the biggest keys for me. Be aware of your salary usage compared to the MVP ownership. Use less owned MVPs in general. And if you really like your lineup, it's probably not a good lineup on FanDuel.
Yeah, the only other thing I'll add to that is surprisingly, it's more unique to use a 20% owned player and a 1% owned player than it is to use two 10% guys. And so as you're building lineups by hand, just think about that a little bit if you're trying to be unique. One of the other questions, there are a few of these we covered already as far as rules and groups and, you know, kind of captain allocation at positions. But one of the things we didn't touch on too much is single entry. And a lot of people can't build 150 lineups. That's kind of always been my approach for Showdown, is building 150. But I actually have one of the seats in this DraftKings Tournament of Champions, which will be the Millionaire Maker Showdown contest at the Super Bowl this year, which is like a 40-man field, 1 in 40 shot at $1 million. So I'm going to be getting into the single entry game in prep for that this year. And I think some of the stuff applies. Definitely correlations still apply for me. I think leaving salary on the table still applies for me there. But I'm curious, Brian, if you have any specifics as far as single entry strategy and contest selection, because I know that's stuff you guys talk about over at Occupy.
Yeah, such a sick flex on the tournament of champion seat. Super excited for you. That's an incredible tournament. I mean, 1 in 40 chance at $1 million. That's unreal. I'm going to try to join you.
Just Captain Lamar, dude. Easy game.
That's all you have to do. Yeah, so Davis has it figured out. So
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, most people can't or don't want to 150 max. So single entry, 3 max is probably your best way. And for me, it's all the things we talked about still apply. Right, you're still trying to tell a story with your lineup from a game script perspective. Like, if it's an onslaught, why does this make sense? For me, it's really, if I'm building single entry, building 3 max, we've talked about FanDuel before, the 100 player leagues there, most people don't talk about them, but they're by far the best return on investment for casual players. You can get 20 to 25 times your investment if you get first out of 100. So I encourage a lot of people to go play those. Same on DraftKings. So when you're building single entry at 3 max, I like to look at leverage spots first. Whether it's projections, a model, your own rankings of players on a single game slate, you get it out, and then you compare that to the projected ownership, and you see where the leverage lies. All right, I like this guy, I think, or my projections say he's going to be the optimal MVP 15% of the time, but projections have him at 5%. Okay, cool. I like him as a leverage spot. Let's use him, and then build my lineup from there, all keeping salary and stuff in mind. Now, the big difference is we're not nearly as concerned with uniqueness and massive duplication in single entry and 3 max, because we're not entering $1,500, we're entering $10. So the ROI is a lot higher, even if I tie with 100 people, compared to if I tie with it in 150 max, it's disastrous. So that's the big difference.
Yeah, and the only other thing I'd add to that, if you run set up groups and rules and run an optimizer with a full salary cap on there, look at like the top 5 lineups. Those lineups possibly will be duplicated in Showdown, but for the most part, you don't have to do weird stuff to create a unique lineup. And I think the only other thing from studying ownership projections of those slates and gathering that information from the RotoGrinders results DB, you do see that the captain ownership pinches on the like top 4 or 5 players. And so, you know, you could probably get wide receiver 2 captains at almost like 1% ownership.
All right, this is how we're going to end it. Your 2020 Showdown MVP thesis is what, Colin?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like last year was so good. It's just to continue to build correlated lineups that reduce the number of duplicates, and got to continue to run exceedingly hot with the variance running in my favor.
All right, yeah. Brian, what's the thesis?
Let my one bink this year be a millionaire maker. Let's run hot.
That's a good ask. I think that's a good ask. Yeah.
But then also I want to bink a FanDuel GPP with minimal ties. I did win one last year, but it was like 20 or 25 people. This year I want to win one where it looks impossible, but it can be done. So
Colin is actually the only person on this show that has not won a millionaire maker. Did you know that?
Oh, that's right, I forgot. Yeah, Davis. Yeah,
I chopped it with 487 people or whatever, but bank.
If you guys do want to hear Brian and I, we're going to be doing a podcast breaking down every slate Monday and Thursday. It's going to be for Daily Roto and Occupy Fantasy subscribers. If you want 10% off Daily Roto, you can drop the promo code Showdown to get 10% off that. You'll get optimizer access projections plus access to both Brian and I. Definitely check out his work at Occupy Fantasy if you want to get his strategy guide, his Showdown ebook, which he put together with a few other sharp people. You can use the promo code GUIDE50 to save 50% off that. And I am definitely going to be digging into that before the season starts. Still got like a week and a half to prepare, but it's going to sneak up pretty fast, and it's going to be a swirling week. It should be really fun. We hope that you guys will join Brian and I at Daily Roto and Occupy.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.